This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Special New Year's Day. It's a special New Year's Day. And the Heisman Trophy winner, Gino Toretta, is on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Gino joins us on Thursdays, and doesn't matter if it's a national holiday. He's here. Hey, he doesn't get, I mean, listen, guy gave his word. Guy gave his word, he's here. I twisted
trash
his arm.
Got picked up today, so we're good.
I figured trash got picked up today in the Grove.
Yeah, January 1st. Yeah, they don't give a day off. I think they come early too because most people know that it's a federal holiday, and I think the trash guys drive through the neighborhood.
Right, because
so
no
fast.
One puts their trash out.
Yeah, nobody puts it out. But I was up late last night doing something, and then I literally Googled. I'm like, does Miami-Dade County come? They came. So
wow, that's
good,
shocking to me. Well, Gino Toretta joins us.
I figured I had to, since you're Nostradamus with the parlay pick with the money line and plus 9.5.
Gino Toretta joins us courtesy of the local 519 Plumbers Union every Thursday, even on holidays. In football and in life, it's about being on the right team. Join the winning team at Local 519 Plumbers Union, a proven path to a strong career. Visit plumbers519.com. How does it affect you? You played quarterback. Now, granted, when you played at UM, not many people were even able to get a finger on you. But how does it affect How many times did you get sacked in your UM career?
Well, I would add in how many times I had to throw the ball away to not get sacked.
So, fair enough. What does it do to a quarterback's psyche when you've got guys like Mezidor and Bain breathing down on you, and they're just kind of teeing off on you? They're having their way.
Well, you can't settle your feet. I think when I said last week, I mean, Sands, he set a college record with accuracy and that, but, you know, all quarterbacks look pedestrian if they get hit in the mouth a few times. And when you watch the game, I mean, those two guys coming off the edge, they were making a move in the pocket and weren't giving them any time. I mean, you know, they were three and out, and it was just a dominant. And, you know, you also give your credit to the back end. I mean, they covered Lake and Smith. You know, Frederick, hell, he was step for step on some routes, and, you know, they were trying to force the ball to his side. And those guys on the back end played well, too.
Since the 2003 Fiesta Bowl, after Terry Porter threw that flag, there haven't been many like iconic hurricane football moments. There's been a couple, but like I think of Trajan Bandy's pick six at Hard Rock against
one.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You can throw in the miracle at Duke with the kick return, the laterals. The Keontae Scott pick six yesterday. I mean, we were talking about it earlier in the show where it was so obvious. Like that was just him understanding, watching film, understanding the formation, understanding the situation, and he just jumped the route. To me, that's going to live on. Like, that'll live in infamy in Hurricanes fans' memories. How special was that play in that moment?
Oh, I think it flipped the entire first half and flipped the game. I mean, because really it was seven, you know, if you look at, take that play out, it was 7-0 at half.
7-0.
And, you know, when you watch those plays and you watch those wide receiver screens, the bad thing for a quarterback, you're throwing the ball really kind of blind. You're just hoping that a wide receiver is going to get a block on a DB, and, you know, they're moving the tight end out there to block the other guy. And, I mean, Scott took a risk because if you look, the receiver's taught, get to the outside shoulder, block him inside, so as soon as the guy catches the ball, most of the time the DB will go to the block and go, all right, I know he doesn't want me to go there. I'm going to go there too. He was just like, hell, I'm just going to run to the inside and just with a beeline. And listen, DBs are DBs because they were once receivers and they couldn't catch the ball very well. That's kind of the joke that we would always give them grief over. But man, you know, to catch the ball like that on a full stride, and he broke down that sidelines. I think it was, you know, I don't think there's any question that play lives on. That was awesome. It set the tone, and really, I thought at that point it really kind of ended the game for him.
Does he make a decision before that when they break the huddle? If I see them in this formation and I see this guy go in motion, like, is the decision made by him already? I'm jumping it. I'm going to get that ball.
Yeah, he's like, okay, I see the motion. It's probably wide receiver screen at the line of scrimmage. And when Smith jumped to the outside, to his outside shoulder, most of the time they will go to the impact because they're like, okay, if you're trying to block me to the left, I'm going to run to the right. You know, you go into the impact. And he literally ran through to the inside of Smith, and Smith realized, you know, he jumped inside, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, bleep. Uh-oh. This yeah. dude just ran right by me. And, you know, was Johnny.
And he's not chasing a ghost.
That's not an easy catch. I mean, you know, that's the quarterback throwing that ball essentially is almost as hard as he can out there to get it out there as fast as he can to avoid that pick six. But, yeah, it was a great play. Obviously, we've heard for about the last 6 weeks with his injury of, you know, we really want Keontae Scott back. And obviously, with plays like that, you realize how important he was and how much they wanted him back while he was injured the latter part of the season.
Gino, did the University of Miami make a statement to college football and college football viewers last night? Was that game the proverbial statement game?
Well, I think, you know, that gives them one more shot, and you got two more. I mean, that's the statement is are we back at the end of the season and you're walking home with a national championship trophy? I think what I watched that game, I think, you know, in something we talked about, there's a few guys on their team where they will not be denied. Malachi Toney and Mark Fletcher and Bain, and it's like, you know, you don't want to say they play through coaching, but like, they don't care. They're just like, hell, I'm not going to let us lose this game. And Malachi didn't have he only had five catches, but he only had about 15 or 20 yards. No real big plays, but man, he made some great blocks downfield. He made some great blocks to the line of scrimmage. And then Fletcher would just, you know, he overcame the fumble, and Bain just from the start. You know, I think that Ohio State was out there. Man, those guys got winded pretty quick on that one long drive, and they, you know, they shuttled them out. All right, give a breather. But it's pretty impressive. They got, I think what they've shown is they have the pieces of the puzzle if they play clean. And I said Beck has to play the best he's played, and he started off a little shaky, like it was just a check down throw and he missed. And I'm like, oh, man, let's, yeah. All right, just settle your nerves. And then he goes on a heater. And, you know, by the time I think he completed 13, 14 passes in a row and the game was over.
That first check down, though, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. That,
oh, my God.
So that's exactly what I said. I'm like, oh, my God, they had set it up perfectly. It's like all go. And it's the easiest throw. The running back standing in front, and it would have been a big play. And I'm like, holy cow. He's all right. He's jittery right here.
But that's nothing but nerves, right? That's just nerves.
Yeah. It's, you know what it is? I always said the hardest throw to throw is knowing the guy's wide bleep open. And you're just like, and before you throw it, you're just like, boy, I can't screw this up. The guy's wide open. and that's what happened. It was like perfect, you know, perfect call. The check down is wide open. I mean, Fletcher turns around. He's off. He's got at least a first down. And it's just you kind of short arm it. I guess it'd be like at the tavern when we were throwing darts and you kind of short arm one and, you know, doesn't hit the board or something like that.
You know, they didn't let non-Heisman Trophy candidates near the dart board. He thinks that I'm playing darts at the tavern. There's 900 people in there.
You weren't throwing darts?
900 people in there. Yeah, little Mark Hochman wasn't able to get close to the dart board. And if he was, he didn't get a turn.
Gino, I want to know your thoughts on Carson Beck in general. But what did you think yesterday about how Cristobal and man Shannon Dawson too, how they called the game? Because we've talked about they have leads and they get a little cutesy and then they're not taking risks. I thought yesterday there was a moment where they didn't go for it on fourth and one when Carson, they overturned the Carson Beck.
It was like fourth and an inch.
Terrible call. I'm like, like clearly past the line. I'm like, his knees, I'm like, this, that was.
And then even if you didn't think that he was past the line, how did you see enough to overturn it?
Crazy.
Well, the whole thing with the officials, I mean, like, okay, fine, you're going to let him play. But there wasn't a penalty thrown, I think, until was it the second half? I mean, nobody had even thrown a flag. And then I was thinking, I'm like, man, was that the same officiating crew out of the SEC that got suspended for like when they Kirby Smart's calling timeout and they said, no, he didn't call timeout.
That's right.
And I'm like, and they got suspended. But I was a little shocked that they overturned that because I didn't see enough. I thought he had it easily when he dove for it.
They punt that, and I'm like, oh, here we go, man. You got a 14-0 lead. Like, go for that. You know, like, you were just wrong. Go for it. They punted away. On the next drive, in the second half, there was a play where the Hurricanes, back in their own territory, they get it to fourth and two, and he comes out. They go for it. He throws a little, I think it was to Malachi Toney, and they get the reception. They go for it on fourth and two. Super risky play. And then that final drive to just continue to go for it. Like every opportunity they had to just kind of run it up the middle and say, F it, like, let's punt it away. Let's trust our defense. They kept going for it, throwing the hitch route. Like, what did you think about their play call? Because I thought yesterday, Cristobal, talk about exercising demons, Shannon Dawson. They called that game, especially in the second half, with some balls, man. Like, they went for it.
Well, that I think the personnel groupings, you know, I thought the one touchdown where they had seven offensive linemen in, and it looked like, I guess it was going to be quarterback option run, and then Beck just threw it to the outside. You know, me as a analyzing football, I'm like, how the hell does the defense, you see seven offensive linemen come into the game, you have to adjust your personnel. If you only got four D linemen out there, you're at a disadvantage in the run game. And I think that they did a great job mixing up formations, some motions. I thought they used Malachi Toney as a decoy a lot. And I think that they were keyed in on, Ohio State was keyed in on stopping him. And they were like, oh, wait a sec, the ball's not going to him. And, you know, the apparently the coaches, you know, in the meetings with the broadcast teams, they were like, yes, you know, the other two receivers had to step up and have big games. And they did. And that's great game planning. It's knowing what the other team is going to do. Hey, they're going to focus on Malachi. Let's use him, but use him as a decoy some. And I thought everything they did worked. I wasn't too concerned when they didn't go for it on the one fourth down. They're up 14-0. To me, when I played, you know, and our defense was that good, our defense thought, hell, we're going to pin them back and we're going to score. And I think that's what Mario and I'm sure the coaches thought, was like, well, hell, let's pin them back and let's see if our defense can get a quick turnover, because, you know, Ohio State wasn't moving the ball at all.
What about Georgia and Ole Miss? We're going to watch the game tonight. Whoever wins is going to be the Hurricanes' opponent next week. What do you think about the Hurricanes and the way that they are built to win against either Ole Miss or Georgia?
I think they have guys on the point of attack on the offensive line and defensive line to give you a chance against anybody. I broadcasted the first Georgia-Ole Miss game. And of the first 11 possessions in that game, there was not a punt. There was a score on every possession by either side. So they just went back and forth, and then Georgia stopped Ole Miss like the last three drives, and that's where they won. Gunnar Stockton has been lights out in the fourth quarter at the end of games. I think Georgia's more battle-tested, more championship-tested. I think they have a better roster than Ole Miss. I think, you know, add in the Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin not being there, I think is going to be an issue. But I think that of the those two teams left, I mean, you know, we got a chance against anybody. I mean, we can block anybody. I mean, Ohio State had one of the best defenses in the country, and we handled.
Would you rather play Georgia for the story, for Carson Beck getting to knock out his former team to advance to the national championship game, or you'd rather play the lesser opponent, which is probably Ole Miss?
I don't know. Because listen, that coaching staff coached Beck for what, 4 years?
Oh, true.
I mean, they know every strength, every weakness, things that maybe he didn't do well when he was at Georgia. So I don't know if I want to face them. I think that would probably give them a personnel advantage of, you know, hey, we know exactly what Carson can and can't do. And I think that Kirby Smart's a pretty damn good head coach, and he's more battle tested. So based on that, I'd probably say, well, I'd rather face Ole Miss, but if we're facing Ole Miss, they just got through Georgia. Right. So, I think it is what it is. I think that, listen, you have to do what you do well when you get in championship runs. And I think Miami should just work on what their personnel is, get their guys healthy from this game, and go out there and execute, because they showed if they execute, they can beat anybody.
What does this say about the ACC, though? Miami scored more points on Ohio State than anybody did all season in the big bad Big Ten, which, you know, I don't know about all that anymore.
Miami, Portnoy's Big Ten.
Yeah. Miami is now 2-0 against SEC this year, Florida and A&M. They're 1-0 against the Big Ten. What does it say about the ACC that you know, Miami is able to do this? I don't know why you're smirking there, Dino. Come on. I mean, everybody loves to run roughshod over the ACC. Nobody was giving Miami a chance. They were looked at as like this big underdog story, and they didn't just luck into wins. Like, they dominated these games against the big bad Ohio State from the Big Ten. Like, they didn't play anybody this year.
See, the SEC is in your kitchen. They're in your lid so bad. Like to me, the ACC didn't help Miami win the championship. They didn't help them win the Cotton Bowl last night. Like, I don't really care. Like, conferences, I can tell you, yeah, SEC is the best conference because they have the best top to bottom, and it's the toughest league to get through. You know, being worried about, hey, we're making a statement for the ACC. Nobody, and nobody outside the ACC, you show up at a bowl game, the only people that chant the conference is people from the SEC. Like, it doesn't matter, SEC, you know, and it's just like, you know, and I always respond, it's like, I'm sorry, where's your team at that's in the ACC? They're not here. So,
You don't think Duke fans showed up last night to root on for the ACC representative?
I don't think anybody was chanting ACC when Miami was walking off the field, like sometimes they do.
They do in the SEC,
you go to the Sugar Bowl. You go to the Sugar Bowl, and it's like fans from not even that team show up to chant SEC when if their conference team wins a game. To me, hell, I'm rooting for the Miami Hurricanes. I don't really care what conference they played in, because we didn't really play in a conference until my last year.
I'm just saying that the gap, like how people were talking about the gap between the conferences.
No, it's not closed. I'm just going to tell you this. Get it out of your kitchen, because it's not even close. You just travel with me to four or five SEC games, and we just go down on the field and watch the guys walk around on the field. It's a different body type. It's a whole different roster in the SEC, but that doesn't mean we aren't right there with them and playing with them.
Well, Mario, we can say this officially, right? On January 1st, 2026, Mario has rebuilt this football program in the way that he envisioned, and it's paying dividends.
No question. Yeah. I mean, we're in a position. I think that probably we wanted to be in the playoffs, obviously, this year. I don't know if he thought he could get enough talent quick enough to make a run once we got there. But I think he's pulled all the right levers. He's got the right staff in place. I think the new defensive staff and the players have shown out. And no, it's been fun. I mean, obviously, it's like I say, Miami's is the best city in America. when our teams win, whether it's the Miami Heat, Miami Dolphins, Miami Hurricanes, Florida Marlins. When we win down here, I guess we're insufferable to the rest of the country.
We are.
But it's awesome that, you know, we're there. But like I said, we got two left. I mean, that's kind of the way he's looking at it. He's like, okay, enjoy this one. But we got two games left. We'll find out who we play tonight after the Sugar Bowl. And then we got to go to the Fiesta Bowl. And then that'd be pretty awesome, though, to play in a national championship game at home. Right.
I mean,
right in Hard Rock.
That would be so badass. How was your New Year's Eve, Gino? Did you go out? Are you a big party guy on New Year's Eve?
No, as I told my daughter, the New Year's Eves are for amateurs. Usually it's people going out that normally don't go out and maybe maybe drink. So, no, we watched the game, made some, you know, got to have pork on New Year's. You're Italian.
Like a gabagool sandwich?
No, I had some spare ribs and sauerkraut for dinner. It was
spare ribs and sauerkraut. Sauerkraut is a side?
No. You cook the ribs, sauerkraut, onions, apples, and then cook it all together. And like the apples and onions makes the kraut sweet. And then you got spare ribs.
That sounds fantastic.
Oh, it was so good. Maybe the noise afterwards wasn't very good, but.
Gino, Hawk, I don't even think you know what I catered. Like, I had a friend over to watch the game.
But by the way, I love how you have a party at your parents' house and your parents aren't even there.
It's like a John Hughes movie from the 80s, except Solana's in his 30s and engaged.
My backyard.
He's taking over his parents' house to throw a rager.
Down in the basement like John Clayton. Mom, paper.
My house, the backyard's not as big. My parents have the pergola. They've got the large screen in the back. They've got the grill. I mean, they've got the setup. You know, I'm not on that level yet.
I know you weren't cooking because you suck. So if your brother was there, maybe
he was not. He was not. But I did cater some authentic Italian.
Oh,
from Olive Garden. I catered Olive Garden party yesterday.
It's a great call by you.
So you just got salad and breadsticks?
Salad, breadsticks, little chicken parm, some penne.
You didn't really bring in Olive Garden, did you?
100%.
You brought in Olive Garden?
I thought it was like banging pots and pans. You got to have black beans or something. I don't know.
Yeah. That's normally a cajachina would be the move, but
that's embarrassing. But why not just a neighborhood Italian place then? Why Olive Garden?
They've got a great deal. Chicken parm combo meal came with a tiramisu, came with the breadsticks, came with the salad, came with a little side fettuccine Alfredo.
Did you tell your guests before they came so they all showed up and they had already eaten?
No, I told them I was cooking Italian. They didn't even know. They thought it was homemade.
Aperol Spritz? Did you have Aperol Spritz on the menu?
We had Aperol Spritz. It was
That's
just a little
how you
too
ring
cold.
In the new year.
A little too cold for the Aperol Spritz, so it was a vino night.
That's how you ring in the new year. I had a microwave cup of Rice-A-Roni. A microwave cup.
God. They still sell Rice-A-Roni?
Yeah. The microwave cup, you just add water and there's a little packet of powder to give it some flavor.
I tell you what, your diet's as bad as it was in college. That's awful.
Happy New Year, Gino Toretta and Miami Hurricanes fans. Gino joins us every week, courtesy of the local 519 Plumbers Union. With all the changes in how America does business, you can count on one thing, the union-trained plumbers of Local 519. Join a winning team today with Local 519 Plumbers Union, a proven path to a strong career. Visit plumbers519.com. What's on the agenda for New Year's Day
football.
Evening?
You
You're gonna be watching football all day, all night.
We got ball. We got to watch the Miami kid in Indiana play Alabama, and then we got leftover
gabagool from last night. Fire up a little gabagool sandwich.
There is some leftover charcuterie, no, my wife made some homemade tortellini and brodo. So we'll have that later for dinner. So
the wife and I went to Italy. Up in West Palm. They opened one in Aventura, but we went up to the one up in West Palm.
I heard
Palm.
The one in Aventura, not very good.
Really?
I love the one in New York. I love the one in Chicago.
If
the one in up there you go to has the prime rib sandwich.
They do. I saw it. Oh, I'd never seen it before there.
It's like the best sandwich you'll ever eat in your life.
I said to Lori, because they had a picture of it up on one of the wall, and I go, did you know they have a prime rib sandwich? Literally said that. It was, I think it was third. What night was it? Tuesday, I guess.
They cooked the whole roast and put it on like a meat slicer, like a Publix, like the cold cut slicer. And they sliced little thin pieces, and they put it on a fresh baguette and put like some herb and olive oil on it. Oh, my God. It's so good.
Yeah, the picture looked fantastic. Yeah. And I'm not a big prime rib guy, but it looked so good.
Oh, it's awesome.
Look at that.
Two thumbs up.
I got a little resolution for 2026, the prime rib sandwich at Eataly.
I'm doing dry January. So,
are you really?
Yeah, I've done it the last few years.
Oh, Aronde's doing something different. I don't know if you heard him on the show earlier this week. He's doing top shelf January.
I like, I watched the Anderson Cooper thing on CNN. He had a bunch of people saying, some guy goes, I'm not going to drink any more in 2026. I'm not going to drink any less, but I'm not going to drink any more. I thought that was pretty good.
That's funny. Happy New Year, Gino.
You too, guys.
There you go. Gino Toretta, the Heisman Trophy winner. We'll take a break. Come back with more of this New Year's Day edition of Hochman, Crowder, and Solana.
This is Hock, Crowder, and Solana.
It's a chain thing. You wouldn't understand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Those are the ones the box score doesn't do it justice. Right. Only we know how we felt and how we chose to attack the mission at hand. Okay? I'm going to start with a couple players deserving of game balls. Rookies no more. Theo Weiss. Quinn Ewers. Two times no pick. Jay Marsh, 5 tackles, interception, PBU, 3 big with a field goal block. Bradley Chubb, 2 sacks and a forced fumble.
Bradley Chubb. Good work today, fellas. That's how we put our identity on the damn field, man. All week we worked it. All week we talked about it. And that's how you go out there and execute. Yep. Now next week we're going to finish this strong, dog. Hey, family on 3, 1, 2, 3. Family.
Inside the Dolphins locker room there after their win over the Bucs, time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. Joe?
All right, Woody, thank you so much. Omar Kelly, Miami Herald Dolphins columnist, up with us this morning after spending time with the team after that 3-point win. And I want to start with a quarterback who got a lot better in this second game. How do you look at Quinn Ewers going forward? He's going to start this game against the Patriots. Where does he fit in for you going into the next season?
Honestly, Joe, I don't think he got a lot better. I just think he didn't throw any turnovers. And that's the ultimate equalizer for this team. If they take care of the football and if they create turnovers, they can win. It was a beautiful pass to Theo Weiss. He supposedly did a no-look pass to him. Quinn has a quick trigger. He's got a stronger arm than Tua. It's not a cannon. He throws sidearm balls. There's an instinct and an anticipation that's been there since he was a seventh round pick and in training camp. That's why he's starting. But would I be willing to say that, oh, he's shown me enough to be the starter in 2026? Absolutely not.
No, I agree with that, by the way. I wasn't even insinuating that. I think most people, even our fan base to the media, agree with that. But I thought he did play better. And part of that is not turning the ball over. I mean, my God, they turned over 3 times and get shut down on fourth down in that third into that fourth quarter, and you have no shot, so he cleaned that stuff up. Let's talk about the other thing that's interesting. Achan's having just an unbelievable year, 1,350 yards rushing now. You're still slow about giving him a contract. You're saying you don't think we need to give him a contract.
Well, It's not Achan particularly. It's the position. I'm fine if they give Achan a contract. I'm always an advocate for players getting paid and players getting compensated for their work. But there are certain positions in the NFL where teams are always dragging their feet to pay them, and running back is at the very top of that list. Right now, if you're looking at giving Devon Achan a deal, you were talking about $50 million, $30 million guaranteed. Yeah. That means it's basically 3 years, $10 million a season. Whereas if you make him play on his final year deal, he'll probably get playing time escalators that bring him up to $4 million. Then you put him on a franchise tag, it'll probably be about $11 million. You're getting him for something along the lines of 2 years for $17 million. So what is the motivation other than sending the right message, which they've usually tried to do? They're probably going to try to do after having their arm twisted in training camp. This is not something they're going to take care of in the off season or free agency. This is something they're ultimately going to take care of when Achan is sitting out training camp and threatening to miss the regular season.
Yeah. So you know, I just say this. So Achan's had a chance to sit back and see the other veteran players, some of them not here anymore, one injured, mm-hmm. not coming back, the other one traded, and another one still here but had to take a cut in pay. He's seen everybody get taken care of, and he's going, wait a second, when do the rules change around here, man? Do I have to pout? Do I have to pout like the quarterback did, or do I have to come out and act like I'm mad, and or do I have to go stand on the side and run sprints and see if guys want to race me, or what do I need to do, right?
Absolutely. This is the game that we play, Joe. They're not just – it depends on what kind of way you want to handle it. Minka basically said, I ain't practicing until you show me the money. He got shown the money. Jalen Ramsey said, I'm not playing a season until you show me the money.
Right.
You showed him the money. Zach Sealer did everything the right way and set an example, and you rewarded him for doing so. Tua basically was sitting out all the training camp. He wasn't sitting out training camp. He was not participating in 11-11 drills in the offseason and was about to do it in training camp, which was going to hold your offense back. So your head coach twisted his owner's arm and twisted his GM's arm to get him the money so that it wouldn't derail the 2024 season. These are how things happen. Now, I make the argument to you, Joe, in the last 5 years, which contract extension are you proud of, and do you think the Dolphins really did a good job with?
Sealer? I Zach Sealer? I'm going with the original ones, just either through injury or just have not worked out.
You had him locked up for 11. You gave him a raise to 15. Did you need to?
Yes, I think it, again, Zach sitting back watching everybody else getting taken care of and going, hey man, I've outplayed this thing. And
how is that Steve Ross's problem? I always struggle to figure that out. He sometimes he's too nice of a guy, but you know, hey, as long as he's going to set this reputation, let's go out and let's pay everybody and let's have $100 million in dead cap.
No, I got you. I got what you're saying.
Let's go get Lamar, make him the highest paid quarterback in the league. What else we want?
No, I got you. We're doing make believe world, and I got you. By the way, I'm not totally disagreeing with you, but I do want to say this, that we set the tone. Somebody before it gets to Mr. Ross has to put this in front of him and go, this is what we want to do. What do you think, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, we probably want to sign Achan for 70 cents on the dollar. If he doesn't accept the deal, make him play out his contract and play on the franchise tag. That means he's got to make it healthy for 2 more years. Like, okay. This is the one thing that people do not get, and I get it because I cover it. The NFL is not a sport. It's not your entertainment. It is a $20 million business.
Well,
and it will always be a business.
Yeah. Well, the fans don't look at it that way, but the players absolutely do.
Yep, and the players and the owners and the front office.
Hey,
and the coaches.
Let's get in the good stuff. Let's get hey, this thing all goes back to And I got two questions for you. Last year, you remember what happened after the last game of the season?
It was Tyreek incident.
No, the statement.
Okay.
Statement was sent out. I got it before right as I was getting on the bus to come home. Get on an airplane, and it said, "Hey, Chris and Mike will be back." Yeah. Are we going to see anything this year? We're just talking about this. Do they send something to the fan base? Do they send something on how they stand or how the process is going to be handled? Do we get anything, in your opinion?
I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so is because win or loss in New England, one, I think Steve is already leaning in a certain direction. Could a 40-3 blowout in New England change his mind? Yes. Could John Harbaugh surprisingly being fired change his mind? Yes. You know, could some sensational GM looking for work change his mind? Yes. I would be waiting for Black Monday, because that's when Flores got fired. The statement last year was, you know, I'm angry, but I really don't want to do a coaching search.
Yes.
And a GM search. And I'm going to give these guys one more year to show me better and show me different. The problem is we haven't seen better and different. We've seen the same old, same old. And, you know, that's the Dolphins' way. And I'm not sure we're going to see better or different if we continue to do what we're going to do. Maybe Champ Kelly's a better talent evaluator than Chris Greer.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be hard. But then, okay, you get better talent that year. Is Mike going to coach that talent better? Mike's got holes in his game as well. Mike is 4-23 in games he's trailed at the half. Mike has rarely ever beaten a team with a winning record. Mike's teams have rarely ever beaten a team with a winning record, a playoff caliber team. Mike's teams struggle massively in the cold. And it's not just Tua that struggles in the cold. It's Mike McDaniel's team that struggles in the cold. So he hasn't fixed any of those things in 4 years. What makes you think and say he's going to do it in five? And then on top of that, we are headed towards a rebuild. If you look at the roster, this is not a tinker and you know, we make this here, that there, and you're going to be in a horrible cap situation. So you're not going to go out there and spend in free agency, and you don't have a ton of draft picks.
Nope.
And more than likely, you're going to have to trade those tons of draft picks to move up to get a quarterback if that's what you want to do, or to trade for a quarterback if that's what you want to do. So this is a horrible situation, and maybe let's say he goes and gets a GM. He says he wants to go and get a GM. Remember the last time he went out and tried to get a GM and told the GM, you're going to have to keep the coach? And four people said nope, said thanks, but no thanks. Well, we going to do that again?
Right. By the way, I'm with you. Hire the GM, but any GM's going to want to know what his situation is, where he understands if I'm stuck with certain people that I don't feel comfortable with, I don't know if I'm going to have a chance to be successful. Yes, I agree with you.
That is correct. And you're not necessarily going to be able to pick from the best. Let's just say John Harbaugh is out there. And he's, you know, he's having a battle of wills with Lamar, and he loses. And Lamar gains control of the Ravens, and Harbaugh's shopping for a new team. Do you have what it takes to attract John Harbaugh compared to some of the other open jobs that are out there?
Yeah.
The New York Giants, the Tennessee Titans. What do you have that's better than those two organizations? And there will be more. I suspect Tampa will be firing Todd Bowles. What do you have that says, pick me?
Yeah. No. You make some good points. I don't know how these coaches look at this situation, which hasn't had success in 25 years. You make a great point. So let me ask you, Tua. Where does Tua gone? Does he come back as a backup, or have they just checked out on him and just trying to figure out when to ship him out and release him the best time?
Joe, what I am told, and this is just told, is that Ross is done with Tua. whether Mike likes him, loves him or not, Ross is done with Tua. And justifiably so. Right now, Quinn Ewers is like 1.6 passer rating below Tua is for the entire season. Now, obviously, Tennessee is going to show you more, and it'll be a greater challenge. So, you know, we'll see what that looks like. But there's no way Tua should look this bad. Tua's got a lot of things to fix in his game and with himself. And only Tua can fix those things.
Yeah.
And he needs to go where he needs to go. Go work with John Beck or go work with Homeboy and fix whatever he needs to fix to come back here.
Who's Homeboy? Are you talking about Nick? Get back with Nick, get that relationship back? What are you talking about?
You know who I'm talking about. I don't, you know, because I don't want him in my Twitter feed because I block him. So I don't need that negativity in my life.
So let me ask you, you're making it sound like you don't think Mr. Ross made this decision for Mike, like bench him now. You don't think that? No way.
I do.
Shot.
Woody
thinks that him. Too. I don't think that. I think that decision was made Mike trying to like, hey man, I got to make a change, bro. I can't. I've done everything I can possibly do for you.
Mike should have known. Yeah, Mike should have known he needed to make a change. Yes, but who in the world has been more loyal to Tua Tagovailoa than Mike McDaniel?
No one. Not even his own father. No, I'm with you.
Okay. So it was justified. Tua was a pitcher who had lost his fastball. You do that, every batter is swinging for the fences on you, Joe. And he ain't worried about the heat coming at you.
But I got to tell you, man, I'm going to make it clear. I don't think, I said it all last week, I don't believe Stephen Ross has not told anybody to do anything. All he does is get phone calls about spending friggin' more money. I don't think he's told, I don't think he's ever told Mike McDaniel, I don't think Stephen Ross feels comfortable that he knows enough about it to make a change, even as a fan.
I think he needs to. And I think that Stephen Ross needs to put his thing on the table. Because a lot of times the things you hear that he wants to do or directions that he's leaning and these geniuses go the other direction, a lot of the time Stephen Ross is right. So at this point, at this age, Stephen Ross needs to start acting like an old man and say, bump it. I'm doing what I want to do. And this fan base already hates him right now for the situation they're put in. So who cares?
Right.
Do what you want to do, bro. You want to give 4 draft picks for Lamar Jackson? Okay. It's your money. You want to make him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL? Okay. You're being used. Just know that. But
by the way, you know, you're not on this thinking Lamar's coming here, man. Why would they let? They're not letting Lamar go. They'll get rid of the head coach if they have to keep Lamar. They're not Lamar go.
You're correct.
But there's only a couple of those Lamars. There's not very many of those dudes out there, in case you haven't been watching this league very long. This thing's a massive quarterback.
But Ozzie Newsome decides, I don't know who's gonna win in that battle. And Ozzie Newsome's gonna make that decision. Ozzie Newsome's a brilliant executive. He has more information than everybody else does. Keep in mind, Lamar needs a new deal. So and their cap situation forces Lamar to get a new deal.
Ours not in very good shape either.
Worse. Lamar is going to make $65 million from whoever's going to write him that big check, whether it be the Baltimore Ravens. And Lamar's mama don't play. She might not be an agent, but she's a ruthless business person. So I've always said when he got his deal and all these quarterbacks got their deal, I said I studied all those deals and I said Lamar's deal is the best because he will see every single dollar of his contract, which everybody else was not necessarily guaranteed to do so.
Well, I'm not one that thinks Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson, their teams are just going to give up on him because he's not happy with something going on. That's still a pretty good roster. I think they win this week at Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think life's good again for the head coach. And I don't know about Lamar. Lamar doesn't look 100% healthy.
Lamar's not playing. Yeah, Lamar's not playing. Back injury, hamstring injury. This is probably one of his worst statistical season.
I'm wondering, we'll find out how much he loves football this week because they need him. I want to see if he plays.
I don't know if he's playing. I would be shocked if he plays. But his injury is not like a mild injury. That back is tight. He can't throw. Maybe he, you know, you've been there. You see him get shot up. Maybe he can work a miracle. But, yeah. You know, if you're not happy with your situation there or you're not happy with your head coach, haven't you seen players sit things out just to, you know?
I don't know, but he got a lot of good players around him on that team. That team just puts together, and I know they're banged up, but they put together one hell of a roster. That guy that you make business decisions, watching him run in cold weather, I was thinking one thing I wouldn't want to do in the league is try to tackle that guy when it's 25 degrees out. Anyway, hey, Omar, thank you, man. Appreciate it. We have so much going on there. Appreciate it, though. It was a good teaser today. And so what do you think on what's going to happen with Mike? What's your gut feeling on Mike McDaniel? I'll leave you with that one.
If he gets – I think it depends. It's seven. It's, you know, it's 8-9. It depends on what happens against this team against New England. Don't embarrass yourself. Maybe you get to keep your job.
Hey, Patriots might be resting guys, man. Don't be surprised if Patriots rest some guys this week. All right, I'll leave you with that one, Omar. I've been wrong so much. Who knows? We'll see. Thank you for coming on, bud.
All right, talk to you later.
Omar Kelly, Miami Herald Dolphins columnist. He's all over the board. Omar's all over. He was going everywhere. Did he have Lamar coming here? He had Stephen Ross making the final say. All right, welcome back, and a good morning to everybody. The Miami Dolphins getting set to finish up their season up in Foxborough against the New England Patriots, who have been absolutely one of the best stories in football from 4-13 a year ago to 13-3, as we are joined this morning by Ben Volen, who joins us from the Boston Globe. Benny, nice to have you. How you doing?
What's up, big dog? Always great to be on with you. Appreciate you, man.
And thank you. I appreciate it. Dave Hyde's also with me this morning, and I just wanted to let you know, trying to figure out how the hell this thing get flipped around. I thought Drake May had a chance on that terrible roster a year ago, but, man, did they flip that thing around. What's the biggest things that happened for you that they're sitting here with a chance to have the best record in the AFC?
Yeah, a crazy turnaround for the Patriots, Joe. They've been sprinkled in magic pixie dust all season. Every move they've made has been a home run. The coaching has been so much better. Vrabel's been terrific, you know, leading the new era of this organization. He's done such a good job of changing the culture and just changing everything about kind of the Patriots right now. Josh McDaniels, phenomenal job this year. You have to give him and his staff so much credit. A very experienced staff. Doug Marrone coaching the offensive line. Thomas Brown, a former coordinator and interim head coach, coaching the tight ends and the passing game. So the coaching has been better. Drake May has taken that second-year jump. He's been unbelievable. I believe the betting favorite to win MVP right now. I mean, his numbers this year are just so eye-opening. And he plays with poise well beyond, you know, his age right now. All the free agents they've signed have been good to great. Like, everything, every move they've made.
Amazing.
Oh, this makes me sick to hear this.
Just the Stephon Diggs ones, by the way. Shock.
And I can't leave out that the schedule has been very forgiving this year. They've played a lot of bad quarterbacks and bad teams. But give the Patriots credit. 8-0 on the road. That's not something that happens very often or is easy to do. Just everything about them this year has been like a charmed life for the Patriots.
Yeah, congrats, Ben. You had that tough years there where, what was it, 5 years between Super Bowls or something. Yeah. But really, it's been 5 years, hasn't it? 5 or 6 since the Brady Belichick era left. And
yeah. Yeah, 5 years.
I always said that here in South Florida, us writers, we write obituaries, and Patriots writers write books about their team. tell us, what's your thoughts going into the playoffs? Seriously, about the can the Patriots make a run here through the AFC?
So, I mean, they definitely can. Like, there's no team in the AFC that I think you look at and say that's a dominant team right now with no flaws. So there's no reason the Patriots couldn't do it. I'm not fully expecting it. I do think I see a little bit of last year's Minnesota Vikings in the Patriots, where the Vikings went 14-3, but didn't really have a championship caliber team and lost in the wild card round. I could see, I think realistically the Patriots are going to be out of the playoffs by the divisional round. I'd be surprised if they, or I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't see them as being a really quality team. And I think the problem is in the trenches. Their offensive line still isn't great. They get pushed around. Their short yardage running has been struggling for the second half of the season. And defensively, they are going to start getting guys back from injury, but opposing teams have been running all over the Patriots. And that's a bad formula for the playoffs. And honestly, there's a kind of a nightmare scenario. I don't know about nightmare, but a worst case scenario, I think, shaping up for the Patriots, where if the standing hold, if they finish in second place and the Bills finish in seventh, the Patriots will host the Bills in the playoffs. And to me, that's the one team that would not be afraid of playing in the cold. Like, if you're the Patriots, you'd much rather play C.J. Stroud or Justin Herbert or Trevor Lawrence in a cold weather game in your place. Josh Allen and the Bills, who just erased a 21-0 deficit in your building. I have my eye on the Bills this week. They could tank this game to the Jets to ensure maybe that they play the Patriots. So that'll be something interesting to watch.
Hey, I got to ask you. So the Chargers come out yesterday and say, hey, Justin Herbert's not playing. We're going to rest all our key guys against the Denver Broncos. And I was wondering, after that happened, I said yesterday, hey, this may change what Vrabel's thinking up there in New England. Do you expect he'll play all his guys against the Dolphins to win that game?
So I think the Patriots will go for it, just because all those games are at the same time. The Broncos-Chargers game, the Bills-Jets game, the Patriots-Dolphins, they're all at 4:25. And, yeah, Herbert might sit, but, like, who knows? I think if you're Vrabel and the Patriots, you go for it and you give your best effort. And to get to 14-3 would be an incredible achievement for this franchise. And they haven't played as well at home this year. So to finish the season right with a home win, going into the playoffs with some momentum.
I know, Dave. I know what Dave's thinking. We're going through down here. I know what you're thinking. No, there's no question.
14-2. Ben, by the way, Ben played as well.
Don't worry, Ben's lived some of this down here when he was here too.
Ben was
don't
with
forget.
The Palm Beach Post. He knows.
Ben had to go through some of this stuff. Hey, I got to ask you, Stephon Diggs, man. I thought when they signed him to that contract, I went, "Oh, this is bad news." And he has been like a leader. I hear him talk before the games. They get him. He's been great. Has he really been this happy all season?
Yeah, he has. He has been a great addition. And I think, you know, winning 13 games definitely plays a lot into that. If they weren't winning all the time, because there have been some games where he has two catches for 21 yards or whatever. And he has not really shown one iota of being, you know, really disgruntled this year. But he's been a great leader for a team that, you know, a lot of new faces this year in free agency in the draft, a lot of young receivers who hadn't really accomplished much in the league. And so Diggs, his professionalism, his training, he is definitely one of the team's hardest workers. And, you know, he started off a little bit on the wrong foot. He had that incident down in Miami on the boat or whatever. But since then, he's really been, A-plus as far as I'm concerned with how he's handled himself and his leadership. And then on the field, two straight 100-yard games here in December down the stretch, proving to be someone the Patriots can rely on. So Diggs has been terrific for them.
Hey, so to get away from the football stuff on the field, back in a little New England drama here. So how's the Belichick thing? This was just an unbelievable year. Like, everybody around the country is talking about Bill and his young girlfriend there. And then when the stuff came out about him blocking the Patriots from coming to North Carolina, not that they'd be interested in any of those players apparently anyway. It didn't look like he had a lot of good players on that team. How much ride did that get up there from you guys in the media? How'd you guys cover that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Belichick, even though he's at UNC, is still a intriguing character that everyone here in New England is very invested in. So, didn't like cover UNC day to day, but the Belichick effect is something that is talked about a lot. And obviously, this was pretty much a disaster for UNC. I think Belichick was generating a lot of the headlines for all the wrong reasons, and I don't think UNC expected that. You know, they probably they thought they were getting the no nonsense, you know, do your job kind of Bill Belichick, and it's been very different with the girlfriend and the attention that they're generating, and some of the pettiness with the Patriots, no question. I honestly, like, his contract, I think, is saving him. The UNC still owes him 2 years and $20 million guaranteed, and it doesn't look like there's a group of wealthy boosters who are willing to scrap the cash together to pay him off. So I think they give him one more year to see if he can get things going. And if it just doesn't work out, then they'll buy him out of that third year. But honestly, if not for the contract, I think they probably would have been moving on, because it just did not work out in any way that I think anyone expected.
All right, let's continue with the Patriot alum coaches. And because the Hurricanes, Miami Hurricanes, are going to face one of them, Matt Patricia, tomorrow. I'm just curious, you're the national NFL writer for the Boston Globe. Do you expect Patricia to stay and get back into the pros, or is he, you know, he's tearing up college football right now?
He's on a good pro team, though, where he is right now.
Yeah, he's making, but even when they lost to Indiana, they gave up 13 points. And what do you see as his future?
Yeah, Matt Patricia at Ohio State this year, like, isn't fair, because he's going to bring the schematic advantage every week, and then Ohio State also has the talent advantage. Yeah. So I think they gave up like 10 touchdowns in 13 games or something. Like, jeez. I mean, it was every game was just a blowout because the defense wasn't giving up anything. If I had to guess, I think his heart's in the NFL. I think, you know, Ohio State was a good landing spot for him to buy some time. But if I had to bet, he'd rather be back in the NFL, and you know, who knows? Like, I'm sure he made some friends over the years that weren't just Belichick guys, and perhaps, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets back as a defensive coordinator. But I think his opportunity as a head coach is probably come and gone, and you know, that's what's going. You know, the Belichick tree is not something that is very marketable right now for these coaches. It just hasn't worked out for any of them, and. Vrabel is the only reason he's working is because he's got away and he's learned from some other guys. So, that's probably where Patricia's headed.
Ben, I got to tell you, man, it was great having you, bud. I appreciate it. And I will see you in a couple of days up there. If you could get us some decent weather, I'd appreciate it. But we'll see you this weekend.
Yeah, bring your snow gear and your cold weather gear, Joe. It's going to be cold.
All right, Benny. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
See you guys. Thank you.
Ben Volen joining us this morning from the Boston Globe. Talk a little bit about the Patriots, man. Everything's good. Everything worked out.
He went right down the list of, you know, the quarterback, the free agent decision, the coach decision, this decision, that decision. Everything's good.
Sometimes you hit it, right? And you stay pretty healthy. They've lost a few guys, but.
But that shows you it all comes down to just football decisions, right?
Yes.
Football, making good football. Don't try to trick it. We're going to tank, and that's how we're going to – no, it still comes down to football decisions.
I agree. No, there's no noon ways to do it, man. It's a good old-fashioned way. I agree. Totally agree. Hey, we got 9 o'clock hour coming up here. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Guaranteed to stir it up. Guaranteed to get it rocking and rolling this morning. You have to worry about that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
With him.
Solana had mentioned to me that Omar Kelly was texting him during the commercial break before 3 o'clock, and I said, well, just tell Omar to call in. It's holiday week. We're casual. We're only on for a few days, and I like talking Dolphins with Omar Kelly. He's on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. He's a columnist for the Miami Herald. We were just reading something in the last segment, Omar, from Barry Jackson, and he did like 10-step plan for Stephen Ross, what the Dolphins owner should and should not do. And one of his suggestions was, under no circumstance, announce after the game Sunday against New England that Mike McDaniel and Champ Kelly are being retained. At least do a search or a well-thought-out process before you come to that conclusion. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And if Steve Ross hasn't already hired an independent person to head up their coaching search, and I know Mike Tannenbaum actually does that, and used to have a consulting firm that's before he even became the Dolphins' top executive. It would be very irresponsible of him. But I have this opinion, unfortunately, and I've heard from too many people that, you know, Mike is safe, and I start to believe that Mike is safe from the standpoint. I know when Mike is nervous, and I know when Mike is comfortable, and he's been real comfortable lately. I'm reading the tea leaves, and I like Mike as a coach, and I think he's growing, and I think he's getting better. But if you ask me if staying with Mike and just replacing the GM or forcing Mike on the next GM was a good idea and was going to take this franchise anywhere, I would tell you no. But I would love to see where Mike goes next season and what he does in terms of growth and development and developing Quinn Ewers and the rookies getting better. I would love to see that, but do I think that should be choice number one? Absolutely not.
Omar, we were talking yesterday about the different pathways Stephen Ross can try to rebuild this organization. Mm-hmm. He could do the slow approach, which would be fire everybody, kind of go through, not a tank per se, but like a mini reset next year. He could
absolutely, a reset's needed. Right. So, I mean, anybody who pretends like a reset is needed is being very irresponsible.
We also discussed, you know, the possibility of him kind of swinging that thing around, going and try to get Lamar and whatever, right? The many pathways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will we know if we find out that McDaniel is safe? Will we know then what the path is definitively, or does that not matter? In other words, does bringing back Mike McDaniel next year, does that mean that the reset for sure is coming?
I don't know what to think or what to tell you because I don't think Steve Ross has made up his mind. The one thing I will say with great deal of conviction is I don't think Steve Ross should make up his mind or do anything or announce anything until Black Monday has concluded. Because for all we know, John Harbaugh could lose a power battle with Lamar Jackson and be the coach on the outs. Like, supposedly, according to NFL insiders, one of these major head coaches is going to be unemployed by the time, you know, there's going to be a surprise firing. And there always is. It might be Pete Carroll. Not to say that I want Pete Carroll. But, you know, and that hasn't gone good in Seattle. I mean, not Seattle, but in
Vegas.
Vegas. So I can't, but I don't. I think it would be extremely irresponsible of Steve Ross to announce anything after the game, no matter what happens. Now, would I be overjoyed and surprised if he does announce something? And let's say they beat the New England Patriots at full strength. I think they can do that, considering they should have beaten the Patriots earlier in the season before the Patriots became this supposed juggernaut. But Here's my problem with Mike McDaniel coming back. The Patriots rebuilt in two seasons. It required a head coach getting fired after one season, but they hired the right people. They hired they put a real football person, not in charge of the organization, but as the number two. Dolphins have a real football person as the number two, so that's not fair. But I truly believe that Alonzo Highsmith is a key to what they're doing in New England. And how come it took them 2 years to rebuild a dynasty and it has taken us 25 years to get in the exact same place where we are right now?
I wonder, will the Dolphins be full-fledged in on trying to get Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow if they are made available?
They are going to be used to do so, or used to strengthen both players' leverage and argument and case. And honestly, Steve Ross loves that. He loves being used. And if he's going to help Lamar Jackson get the highest paid contract in the NFL and maybe, you know, be Lamar's consolation prize if he loses a power bit will in battle, and give the Ravens whatever they want to go get Lamar and then make him the highest paid quarterback, you know, that's Steve's business. Let him, you know, like, we act like anything we've done has worked. Like, at this point, to be honest with you, I don't care anymore. And I think the majority of this fan base feel the same way. They don't care anymore.
But you don't care about what? Whether they get Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow, or you just don't care about anything this franchise does?
I don't care anything they do. They could go draft. They could trade up 3 first-round picks for Mendoza. I don't care. And I cover the team. Because literally, do you have any trust, belief, faith, conviction that these guys are going to do anything properly?
I mean, no, based on they try. It's not like
they try.
It's not like they cheap out, or, you know, it's like
they spend big money.
They try. Yeah. They just don't succeed.
Right, but part of that was, you would agree, Chris Greer, Omar.
He's not. Half the time, Chris Greer goes with whatever everybody else in the room wants to do. So
he was the one picking the players. Like, to me, a big part of why the Dolphins are back to where they're at is because the roster was built incorrectly. And sure, Tua has a lot to do with that.
But the roster was built incorrectly because of Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel has an obsession with speed. And power and size should be what your obsession is with. He built this team wrong. And that's Mike McDaniel. That's not Chris Greer. Chris Greer is a chameleon. Whatever anybody is in power else wants is what he's going to do, which is why I hate when people blame Chris Greer for selecting Brian Flores, because I know for a fact, because it's come out of their mouth, his mouth, Chris Greer's mouth. Chris Greer will never give a head coach a quarterback that he doesn't want. Never, ever. So, like, Adam Gase did not want to coach Lamar Jackson. That's why Lamar Jackson isn't here. So, Chris Greer liked Lamar Jackson. Steve Ross was obsessed with Lamar Jackson. But Adam Gase didn't want to coach him. He's not here. They had a great offer to trade away, not get Minkah Fitzpatrick. And Steve Ross's bright idea was, let's take Lamar Jackson. And they fought about it the whole time of the draft selection, till Chris Greer, for the very first time, did something with conviction, which is, this draft is mine. I'm making the selection. I want Minkah Fitzpatrick, and he took Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Omar, are you going to go see Avatar?
Eventually. Eventually, I'm going to get around to it. Once, maybe when the season is done. But you know how I feel about your movie takes. I mean, Superman.
He took issue with my review of Avatar. I saw it over the weekend.
It's probably too long.
Impossibly long. It's not too long. It's impossibly long. I don't know what is it. James Cameron who made that movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. There has to be not a single frame of film left on the editing floor because the movie is impossibly long. Now, have you seen the first two?
I saw half of the second one because I was on a plane and I was actually watching it live, but I didn't see the beginning of it. But it was captivating from where I saw it. I do want to go back and see it. I think I have to see the second one before I see the third
one. I guess. I didn't remember anything that happened. I don't know. I don't know what was going on. That movie, by the third hour, if you're not checking your clock on your phone every 5 minutes, there's something wrong with you. I'm telling you, I don't mind a long movie that keeps me enraptured the entire time. By the third hour, I was having conversations with myself like, I hope there's someone outside trying to negotiate my release. I felt like I was a hostage in a hostage situation. And it's not a bad movie. It's just way too long.
I can understand that. I watched like the second one, and I swear to God, I was watching for like 2 hours. I watched it on a plane with commercials. So maybe it was, you know, maybe it probably was super long.
It's funny you talk about seeing it on an airplane, because as I was sitting there, I was thinking to myself, oh my God, I would almost be to Vegas if I started a flight when this movie started. Like, I was having thoughts of like how much of my actual day was being eaten up by this movie. I couldn't believe what I was sitting through.
You'd be halfway to Vegas. You probably would.
Yeah, I think a little further. All right, Omar Kelly, read his stuff in the Miami Herald. Always appreciate your time, Omar.
I got you.
Welcome back to the Tobin and Leroy Show. We have a special treat for you, ladies and gentlemen. A special treat indeed. We're going to head over to our guest line, brought to you by Toyota of Hollywood. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. On the line right now, we have one of the goats of comedy, a legend himself, who will be live at the Fort Lauderdale Improv on New Year's Eve. Two shows. You can catch him at 7 p.m. and at 10 p.m. Again, that's at the Fort Lauderdale Improv in Dania Point. Mr. Marlon Wayans, how you doing today, sir?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Alive and blessed. Now, I know we are doing a phone interview, so you can't see me, but I've worked with you multiple times as the sound tech with you in D.C. At both the Miami Improv and at the Fort Lauderdale Improv. And I must say...
I know who this is. What's happening, brother? How you doing?
I'm alive and blessed, bro.
I know your voice, but I know you look. You look like you're Indian, but you're like Puerto Rican or something.
Okay, you know, fair. No need to laugh. No need to laugh that much. No need to laugh.
Hey, mother, I can't look at him the same way now.
Okay. Yeah. I have been checked as ambiguous. I do check the ambiguous box, so I totally get it.
I was spot on. I was like, I know exactly what this is.
That's unfortunate. But hey, at least you know, so I'll take it. I appreciate that. And honestly, bro, you've given me some of the best straight up advice I've had in my life. And I think it was to quote, stop being a bitch. I think that was what you told me one time.
Did I say that? You sounds did that like me.
Yeah, indeed. You indeed did, bro. So, you know, I appreciate every time you do come down. I'm telling you, this is one of the goals.
Because you got to be fearless in this game, man. You just got to be fearless. If I attach myself to fear, man, I couldn't have grown. I couldn't even be a stand-up comedian, let alone keep creating new sets. You know, I don't fear the crowd. First thing I say in my head before I go on stage is F them. Because if I let them control me, I would not be funny. So stop caring and just go do it.
Yeah, there's make never been a time that I've seen you uncomfortable on stage, whether it's someone who wants to yell loud or whatever the hell is going on. I've never seen you uncomfortable on stage. It's a mentality that you definitely have to lock into. I wanted to talk about this mentality. I know you just released a movie not too long ago, Him. And you've called this movie the Black Swan of football. And we talk about the mama mentality or being locked in. After playing Isaiah, do you think that this elite competitive drive is something that you identify with, or is something that you find kind of crazy?
I am Isaiah, except I'm not insecure in terms of his work ethic, in terms of my abilities, in terms of how I work, the mentality of a cleaner. Like, I read this book, Relentless, by Tim Grover, and he's Michael Jordan's trainer. He was Dwayne Wade's trainer. And it talks about coolers, closers, and cleaners. And Michael Jordan and Dwayne Wade are cleaners. And that's how my Tom Brady, cleaner. I'm a cleaner, man. You give me the ball, I'm going to find a way to score. I'm going to find a way to score. I'm a hard worker, and I don't have no quit in me.
Man, love
so, like Marlon, I'm a fan. Marcos is too young for this. But see, I go way back with In Living Color. And it was one of the first shows that I had seen on TV where a lot of the stars or the pieces of that show, not just your family, went on to have big time careers. And I always associated you guys in that show with giving others an opportunity to shine. And seeing Rosie Perez and Jennifer Lopez and Carrie, Jim Carrey, and seeing those people go on to have these careers and thinking, I can't even tell people where I first saw them on In Living Color because they're going to say, what was that? How does it feel?
Keenan was a tastemaker.
Right.
You know, Keenan was ahead of his time as a visionary. And, right. You know, he basically was tapping into great talent, you know. And it wasn't an accident that everybody's gone on to have such great careers because, you know, those were very talented people. And Keenan actually gave you a blueprint on how to make it. Always there for good advice. And always thought of hard work and dedication to your craft.
And that's one of the things that, you know, plus, I mean, come on. Like, how hard is it to come up with some of these movies? I could watch White Chicks right now over and over again. And I'm singing all these ridiculous songs. I don't even know who sing the songs, but I'm singing them and doing my head all crazy. And like just all of you guys' movies, all the movies that you have done and all the movies that, you know, it's your own type of movie, but I can follow it and laugh with it. And it's original. I always know whose movie it is. And I have a blast. How fun is it just making something that is, you know, on its own? It's not like anything else and everybody can enjoy it.
That's the beauty is we don't even know we're doing it. It's just our natural ability of what we do and how we do. And, you know, we work hard. I don't just write a movie and let the first thing stick. You know, we just wrapped Scary Movie 6. And, you know, we didn't write 100 pages to film 100 pages. We wrote like 700 pages to film 100 pages. And, you know, it's just our work ethic and our process, and we make sure we make each other laugh. And that's the goal. And it's a natural instinct that we keep on refining. And so it goes from art to science.
I would imagine if you can make
it lasts over time, right? It's not like you do it and you laugh just that year. You can watch White Chicks 20 years removed and you'll laugh like it's your first time you saw it. Don't be a menace. Put Don't Be a Menace on. You'll laugh like the first time you saw it. That's just the way we make movies, man. We don't try to make movies, try to make comedy classics.
So if y'all can't make each other laugh, it don't make the cut.
Exactly. If it ain't making us laugh, the audience ain't gonna laugh. We're the hardest people to make laugh. The audience may laugh at some stuff, but we're like, we don't think it's funny enough. So, you know, we're gonna keep pushing and pushing and pushing until, you know, we make something that's just not that makes the audience hurt. That makes the audience go, yo, that was hilarious. We may never get critic love, but, you know, we don't make it for the critics. We make it for the audience.
Now, you mentioned Scary Movie, which I know you just wrapped production of, scheduled to come out next year, as of right now, June 12th, 2026. This is another classic, timeless classic, that they tried to take, they tried to twist, they tried to do it their own, and it never really hit the same. Now that it's back in your hands and you're able to create these things, these timeless classics, does this feel like you're almost in like another era of a championship run? You know, you did your first, you had a success early on, and now you have an opportunity to go back. Does this feel like another championship run with you and your brothers able to do this?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it feels like, you know, the world needs this laugh. They haven't laughed hard in the movie theater in a long time. This is not just about this franchise. This is about, you know, the world needs to laugh. We are not laughing. We're not laughing at ourselves. We're not roasting each other like we used to. You know, there's a lot of misery in this world, and the world needs laughs. And so we need to go to the theater and sit in the audience and laugh with and at each other. And this movie is going to offer that opportunity.
Now, your range is something that I think a lot of people don't really understand in that, you know, you may see a lot of roles that Marlon's done throughout the past. And my wife and I always talk about this story of how she came to the one of your first sets that you did post-COVID at the Miami Improv. And she came in expecting to see, you know, the what she saw on the Wayans Brothers show or what you saw in Scary Movie. And she left there in tears. And you know, just of a beautiful movement of, because, you know, how you talk about your mother, she was able to identify with that. And just the family elements of these things, of how you're able to go from someone who, you know, can play these comedic roles in White Chicks to even in the movie Him, you know, where you completely, you even transformed your body. You dropped 25 pounds. You did 2-a-days. Just to look the part and go through it with the range. And by the way, while I have you on that, I'm doing a show here with Leroy Horde, former running back for the Cleveland Browns, but this guy's falling apart at any second. While you were doing these training camp 2-a-days, did you have a moment where you're like, nah, I'm too old for this?
Nah. I only was came to throw in the football while I was like, I'm too old for this. That hurt my arm so bad. God bless Phillip Rivers. That's what I need to stop, man. But doing the work and doing the lifting and doing that, I was able to, you know, not just keep up with Tyreek, but sometimes he'd look over during training like, yo, what are you made of, bro? And I was just going in. I needed to do twice the work in order to, because he's naturally younger, bigger, you know, when you're 25, you drink a bottle of water and you be buff. You be cut up. You get 50, you got to work it off.
Look, man.
You got to change your diet. You got to change what you drink. You got to change how you breathe. You got to change how you sleep. Like, when you 50 trying to get abs, trying to get your body in shape, it's a whole nother game.
Now, Marlon, you've done a lot, and I won't take too much of your time. One of the things that I don't think gets enough attention and love when we talk about classic television shows is the Wayans Brothers show. But again, I talk about your range. I know that you're guest starring again on the fourth season of Bel-Air. And with you doing stand-up comedy, movies, Bel-Air, how are you able to switch back and forth between all of these different responsibilities? Or do you find a way of somehow, like, making it the same?
God's gift, man. It's something that I magically worked toward my whole life. And now it's just, I can push a button and be wherever I want to be. It's all about what I choose to do. And it's not about, I have to think about it, I have to change my mode, I have to change. It just shifts my energies, but everything is hard work, everything is dedication, and everything is, you know, vulnerability. And I just do the work. There's one thing that you don't know about me. I do the work. I live on a stage. Even when I'm doing movies, I'm still working on stage. I'm still doing stand-up because I'm working on, it's not the stand-up. It's the showmanship when I got to do interviews. It's you know, I don't know when I'm going to be on a comedy set. To be my mind always thinking. When Scary Movie, I had to shepherd this one, you know, and be on set and give other people improvs. I'm always writing as a writer, as a visionary. And so it's just, I work my whole life to be this entity that I am. And I just want more opportunity to go do it. You know, I think if you ask me right now where I'm at, you know, I'm probably one of the greatest investments Hollywood can make.
Marlon Wayans is bringing his Wild Child tour to the Fort Lauderdale Improv. That's in Dania Point. You can catch him Wednesday, December 31st, New Year's Eve, 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. No better way. Honestly, you skip all the traffic, the crazy drunk drivers, all this. Watch yourself one of the best comedy performances you possibly can and bring in the new year the right way. Marlon, I want to thank you for giving us your time today.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, guys. Thank y'all.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marlon.
Wait. Whoa. Yeah. Time out.
Yes.
Did you hang up on him that quick hung up on us that quick?
No, he didn't hang up.
Yes, okay.
I accidentally hit line 6.
He's nervous.
I'm like,
it's a legend, like, that we're talking about.
No, like, wow. I went to pull it down. And then my finger hit line 6.
For me, they are like the first family of like comedy as far as how many people in their family are involved, how many people they help. You know what I mean?
They're like the Matthews family of comedy.
Yes, sure. But people think, Like, Jim Carrey was on In Living Color. Yeah. He didn't get those opportunities somewhere else. He got them from them.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx in Living Color. Like you said, man, Keenan had a way of picking talent. That whole family.
And everybody said that was his brother. I'm like, he was in it, dude. They were all in it.
Right. I mean, they're trying to think you were speaking as if, you know, he was the head. No, it was you were just trying to say how talented the family was. And they could have just done the show by themselves with the talent from the family, but they included so many other talented artists,
so many other people that went on to have careers
that became bigger stars individually. Like you said, and two of them were dancers. You had Rosie Perez. Well, Rosie was already big, but she was the choreographer. And you had J Lo. Then you had then you had obviously Jim Carrey, Jamie Foxx, Tommy Davidson, David Alan Greer.
If you make it the other way, make that a white show.
A Saturday Night Live.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, they wouldn't be the black version of Jim Carrey. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't matter to them. They just wanted to make people laugh, whoever it was.
I just didn't like the fact that he called me racially ambiguous. I wasn't necessarily a fan of that.
Dude, you do look Indian, you are Puerto Rican. That was hysterical.
Wait. When he said that, how many people stared at Marcos and went, I can see it.
Right, man. I love when Marta comes to town. DC Irvin, his opening act, also a great guy as well.
Oh, they're hysterical.
Yeah, for sure. When we come back, we're going to reflect on the year 2025. I got some moments. According to AI, these are the biggest moments. Let's see if the robots know their thing. We got that and much more on the Tobin and Leroy Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.